So what is Doom exactly?
People can have different definitions. I think a simple definition for my purposes is if you destroy more than 99.9% of the value that humanity was going to have on its historical trajectory, you just wipe it out. You know, you go to such a small fraction of the potential value. I would call that doom. And yes, it's vague, but it is kind of, it's pretty easy in practice to distinguish whether, hey, look, there's a bunch of galaxies with what we'd recognize as ongoing life, ongoing civilization, whether it's flesh and blood or silicon or whatever it is. It looks like a civilization. It looks interesting. It looks productive. It looks fun compared to, oh, like it's just gray goo or it's just darkness, right? So that's kind of the distinction I talk about when I talk about like a good future versus doom.
The doom that you're interested in, that you speak about in your podcast, is the doom really kind of specifically associated with AI doom? So if someone's listening and really doesn't know, you know, anything about this topic, really, can you paint a picture at all of how doom from AI might happen?
What I, as an AI doomer, what I worry about is in 10 years or in 20 years, in the near future, in my own lifetime, I'm worried that you're not going to see the human civilization that you expect. You're just going to see basically a wasteland where it's just AIs doing what AIs want to do, simply because they'll be the smarter species. So basically, they're going to do to us what we very happily did to all the other animals, right? The way humans have taken over Earth, you know, we're causing the sixth great extinction, like a million species have already gone extinct, and we're still working on that, right? We're still in the process of very successfully extincting pretty much every species. Maybe we'll leave beef cattle alive, but we're in the process of replacing them with lab-grown meat, which I support, by the way. But the point is, we are currently manhandling the Earth to do what we want. Even though lions and tigers, they have sharper claws than us, they're bigger than us, you'd think that they would have their own niche. But no, we are taking everything as the human species, right? So the treatment that we're giving to the entire biological ecosystem, I don't have a problem with that as a human, right? I think that's fine. But I think it's an illustrative example of what's going to happen to us when we build AI.
Is there any reason to suspect that this analogy won't follow in the sense that AI will, maybe because it's more intelligent or some other reason, will treat us differently in the way that we treat animals? Is there any sensible idea that way, or do you not see it?
Normally when I propose AI doom, that's a pretty obvious question, right? It's like, okay, yeah, that's the worst case scenario, is like a species that has its way with us, but can't we just like make the species good? I mean, we build it after all. Can't it serve us? And the answer is yes, in principle, right? Like, couldn't monkeys have just built humans to serve monkeys? Yeah, in principle, right? You can wire up a human brain to want nothing more than to serve monkeys, right? But in practice, that didn't work for the evolutionary process. And so the question is, how likely are we to make it work? The problem is we don't really have the tools to make it work. Like the way we're building AIs, we're not actually inputting a proper wish into the AIs. We're more like we're just batting them around and letting them evolve inside their computers by reading the internet. So we're just hoping, look, if it reads the internet and then it just like figures out how to be intelligent and it talks to us, that's going to be enough to keep it serving us. Like that's what people hope. You even hear them throw on this language like, look, it's a line by default. If it read a bunch of nice web pages, maybe it'll be nice. And so now we get into the weeds of like, well, wait a minute. What actually is going to get outputted from this process, right? What kind of mindset, what kind of goals does the actor that comes out of all this, what does it actually want? Because I think there's two steps here. Like the first step is, do you accept the premise that if it's smarter than us, then it can manhandle us and it can have its way with the universe? That's the first premise. And then the second premise is, okay, given that it can doom us, will it want to doom us, right? They're kind of two steps of the argument.
And this other kind of key term related to doom is p-doom. What is p-doom?
Yeah, so P means probability, right? It's a probability of doom. So a lot of us AI doomers, we believe in Bayesian probability, you know, like prediction markets. If you go to a prediction market, you can see there's odds for everything. And you can basically, you can express how likely you think something is in the form of a probability. And then you can give or take odds. So like if I think that something has a 70% chance of happening and I look at a market and the market's saying it's only 55% likely, I might purchase a share in that prediction market. There's basically ways to bet on your probabilities. And Bayesian reasoners like myself, people who believe in Bayesian philosophy, we just think that in order to be a rational person and reason about things coherently, you have to roughly have some idea of the probability of things. You can't just go around saying like, oh, there is no probability. Like the world ending, there's no such thing as the probability of the world ending. Like, no, you have to put some probability of it. I'm not saying you have to know the exact decimal point, right? I'm not saying you have to have a super precise probability. But if you can't tell me the difference between like, oh yeah, there's a 99% chance that humanity will survive for the next million years compared to like, oh no, there's like roughly a 50-50 chance, or like, oh no, there's like a less than 1% chance. Like there's something called the, you know, the ballpark probabilities. So when we talk about P-Doom, we're just saying like very roughly, are we talking like no problem, we're totally going to survive, or are we talking like we're almost certainly not going to survive? And as for me, I'm roughly in the middle. So I'm sometimes I say I'm 50%. Sometimes I quote a leader of one of the AI labs who said that he's 10 to 90%. Sometimes I quote Dario Amodei from Anthropic, who says he's 10 to 25% P-Doom. There's a lot of smart people who are in this vast middle range. That's definitely not like, oh, we're 99% doomed. But it's also like, oh, don't worry about it, we're not doomed. There's a vast middle range, 10 to 90%, where it's like, oh, we're kind of doomed. Like, it seems like we very well might be doomed in our own lifetime. So that's my P-Doom, is like this middling range of like, hey, we really might be doomed.
Can you explain a little bit more about how you go about determining what your P-Doom is? So what is your P-Doom roughly, and how do you come up with
it? Yeah, it's roughly 50%. But like I said, it's more like 10 to 90%. I think the easiest way to explain it is to be like, look, imagine I told you that my P-Doom was only 1%. That seems like I'm being stupid, because like, how is it only 1%? Even if you look at nuclear conflicts, right? I mean, we humans, we come close to dooming ourselves all the time. Like the Cold War, there were so many close calls. It's very fascinating to read like Wikipedia's list of nuclear accidents. You know, we literally dropped a bomb where 3 out of 4 of its safeguards, we accidentally dropped it in the US, in the Midwest, and it almost went off. But luckily, the last safeguard worked because there was like a 20-volt switch that luckily stayed in the correct position, even though all the other fail-safe. Like, it would have been like a 10-megaton blast. Like, insane stuff. Like, we came very close to nuclear doom and many, many different times in the last 50 years. So this idea that humanity can doom ourselves, like, it's clearly on the table. It's clearly on the table that AI might go crazy on us, and it might use its intelligence to manhandle us in a way that we don't like. So if I were to tell you a number that's less than 1%, I feel like I'd be failing very bad. And similarly, if I were to tell you a number that's greater than 99%, it's like, really? There are some very smart people who think that we're not doomed. There are some smart people like Robin Hanson who thinks, well, AI is probably going to take over eventually, but it'll be okay because it's our descendant. So just the fact that there's so many smart people disagreeing and having different opinions makes me crazy to say greater than 99%. So I've now given you the argument why it's clearly 1 to 99%. And then it's just a matter, now we're just talking numbers, right? Like, should I push it past 5 or 10%? I would say definitely yes, because of all these different arguments I could tell you. So basically, when you hear a bunch of arguments and all of the arguments sound strong, and they all sound mutually enforcing, and they all sound convergent, like there's a lot of deep principles why there's like many different ways why they're doomed, that tends to push somebody above 5 or 10%. And then on the other side, well, why can't I push past 90%? Well, the obvious argument is like, we don't want to die, right? So there's a lot of humans that are highly motivated not to die. And so far we've muddled through with nukes. So I have trouble giving a more than 90% chance of doom, just because we're all going to try really hard when we get sufficiently scared. So that's roughly why I end up at 10 to 90%.
So you host this great podcast called Doom Debates. What exactly are you trying to achieve with this podcast? Like, how do you think this can maybe help AI safety and risk prevention efforts?
So for me, it's very clear that we're doomed, right? So I have a strong position that AI is totally reckless right now to keep developing further. It's like insane. The grownups in the room really ought to shut it down. Problem is, a lot of smart people aren't on the same page as me. So my podcast, Doom Debates, is just systematically saying, okay, let's bring all the smartest people in the room with all the different perspectives of why we're not doomed or why we shouldn't pause AI development, and let's just debate them all. Like, it's like a video game, right? Just everybody come at me, tell me why you think we're not doomed. I'll tell you why we are doomed. And my goal with the podcast is that viewers can just watch episode after episode. Okay, this person has a different reason why we're not doomed, but their arguments aren't holding up. This person has a different reason. Their arguments also aren't holding up. Why does everybody have different reasons why we're not doomed that all seem weak? So I'm hoping that somebody, it's hard for me to lay out the entire argument why we are doomed. But when you see all the different people trying to argue that we're not, and they're all kind of not seeing big holes in their argument, I hope that that will together create a case of like, okay, maybe by the process of elimination of all these bad arguments, maybe we actually are doomed and it's time to act. So that's kind of the approach that I'm taking with Doom Debates. And then higher level, the general strategy, you could call it fear-mongering, what I'm doing. I actually think fear-mongering is good. And the reason is because we're building mutual knowledge that we're doomed. Mutual knowledge, meaning we need to know, not just that we know we're doomed, but that I need to know, that you know, that I know, that he knows, that everybody knows that we're doomed, or that the majority of people know that we're doomed. The reason it's mutual knowledge is because individuals already suspect that we're doomed. Like if you go to a random person in the world and explain the very basic situation with AI, like it's getting smarter than us, we don't really know how to control it. How does that make you feel? And they'll be like, bad, I don't like it, I would rather stop it. It's like, great, you think that. Most people think that. Most people don't realize that most people think it and think that it's urgent. So I'm just building mutual knowledge.
Interesting. So you think a lot of people, if they were to just take a few seconds to hear some arguments and think it through, would actually be already in a, you know, possessing a similar belief to yourself?
Exactly. Most, and you know, surveys show, there haven't been a ton of surveys done, but there's been like 4 surveys that I've seen done on the American population. There's been some outside the US. You know, I don't have the latest data, but I've never seen anything other than a result saying, yeah, the majority of people don't feel that we need to race to AI right now. They're scared of the consequences. They're scared of human extinction. And they want to see regulation. Like, this is a popular opinion. So the funny thing is, I'm normally a contrarian. I'm normally in a position of like, look, people need to learn. They don't understand what's good for them. Let me teach you what's good for you. But here, I'm a contrarian against the tech industry, where it's a bunch of engineers who are going to their job, making these high salaries, building technology that they think is cool. And I have to explain to the engineers of like, hey, what humanity wants, what most of your peers want who aren't engineers like you, is they don't like what you're doing because, as your own CEOs admit, it's reckless. It's not something you actually know how to control. You just like it and you're making money, but they want you to stop. So that's what I mean, is like the majority of people are on the same page, but they don't really have, they're not unified to take political action because they don't realize how urgent it is. So it's basically my job is to be like, hey guys, wake up. Like you just need to wake up. Once you wake up, you already know what to do. You already know this is bad. And so when I'm fear-mongering, I'm just bringing attention. I'm like, hey, look, this is your leaders right now. They're dooming you. Like, you guys want to do something politically? That's basically my position.
So what was your journey into hosting this podcast?
Yeah, so my journey began when I was in college. So this is around 2007. I'd always grown up as like a software engineer, loved programming, and I considered myself rational. But then I read Eliezer Yudkowsky. I read Les Wrong, and I'm like, wow, this guy has a lot of really powerful philosophical arguments, arguments about how to think better, and also arguments why we don't know how to control AI. And that's going to be really scary when we build AI, and we're probably going to build it in an unaligned, uncontrollable way. We're probably going to mess up the security. So I kind of went down the entire rabbit hole all the way back in 2007. And then I was so moved by it that I went and met Eliezer Yudkowsky in person. I donated a lot of money to the Machine Intelligence Research Institute that he was running and the Center for Applied Rationality. So I've been steeped in this stuff for 17 years. Only thing is, I used to think that it would take a long time, right? So I used to be like, wow, these ideas are just amazing. They're way ahead of their time. So like in 2100, right, these are really going to come into play. And then the problem is, as we all know, a few years ago, you know, with GPT-3, GPT-4, we were like, okay, so the time is actually now, right? Like life comes at you fast. And to Kurzweil's credit, right, he's always been saying 2029 to superintelligence. So you got to hand it to Kurzweil. Like he wasn't surprised, but I was surprised that, you know, that it only took until the 2020s to get to the Turing test, to have a bunch of people now predict that we're going to have AGI in 2027. Like this is like the new ballpark, right? Like 2100 now seems very late. And so now I'd spend my whole career just being like, whatever, I'm just going to be a software engineer. I'm just going to do startups. But now I'm like, well, I can't look away from this, right? We're on a conveyor belt that's taking us right to the whirling razor blades, right? Starting another company right now, doing anything where you're just focused on like long-term financial success, it's just crazy. It's like, you know, it's a train wreck happening right now. So in terms of my podcast, you know, I'd built up a following on Twitter. I enjoy tweeting a bunch of stuff like clips of people saying dumb stuff on podcasts about AI or people saying smart stuff on podcasts about AI. So I noticed myself spending a lot of time tweeting and building up Twitter followers. And then finally, I was like, look, if I'm spending so much time producing this content, why don't I just, you know, maybe I have the stamina to produce episodes of a podcast where it's like me talking and I interview a guest, like, let's try it. That was basically the threshold I needed to reach because I'm like, look, podcasts are a lot of work, right? Why would I have the stamina? It's just me noticing how much I was tweeting. I was like, okay, tweeting is a waste of time. Let's convert the same energy to a podcast. And sure enough, I've been doing it for 6 months and I still have the stamina to do it. And I'm having a lot of fun and it's growing. So that's basically been my journey to Doom Debates.
Given your concerns and your worries on AI, like, how are you doing personally? How do you feel about all this?
I feel fine. It's just, you know, people's feelings are mostly just genetic, I think, right? So if somebody has like a predisposition to be depressed, then they'll notice AI and they'll be like, well, I'm depressed because of AI. And they'll be logically correct, but it doesn't really help to be depressed. Whereas, you know, I've been fortunate, I don't suffer from depression. So I have like a decent happiness set point. So you know, every day I wake up and I'm like, yeah, humanity is doomed. That doesn't make me feel too depressed. So, and it just makes me feel like, okay, well, I guess I'll just spend my time working on doom stuff. That's kind of like, you know, I just feel like that's like a good niche for me of stuff I could work. I could produce good content on it. That's fun for me too. So, you know, I'm getting some daily enjoyment for that. So I feel fine. I think psychologically analyzing myself, one thing that probably makes me feel better is that, which isn't even rational, but it's like when I think about doom, I don't think of like myself getting screwed. The fact that everybody else gets screwed, even though it's my own family, I'm just saying psychologically, I think if I do some internal reflection, I think the reason it stings less for me is I guess there's no like social status component. If anything, my status goes up because like, look, I called it. I told you guys, right? So I guess, so I'm basically one of the coolest people in like the last hours of the world ending because I was one of the people who told you guys that the world was going to end. But, you know, me and my family living like a caveman, that's not going to be fun, right? So I'm not saying I want that to happen. I'm just saying intuitively, why am I not literally depressed right now? It's probably like those status dynamics being computed by my subconscious.
Yeah, you talked about how your kind of career choice now has been, you know, influenced by your beliefs in AI. Like you've got to do this podcast, you've got to think about this issue. Is there any other aspects of your life that you have changed, given your beliefs about the future, perhaps regarding money or any other thing?
So the aspects of my life. So number one, I'm not interested in doing another startup or angel investing for the long term. Those are activities that I used to do, right? That used to be fun for me. And now it's just like, what's the point of a long term payoff? Like, you know, it's certainly changed like how I invest because it's more like I don't need to optimize my life for trying to get richer and richer until I retire. If I retire on welfare, like that's still a win for me, you know, like, or if I have like, you know, if I can just keep my current house, that's already a win. Like the fact that I even get to retire at a normal retirement age, right, which for me would be in like, I don't know, 25 years, that's a huge win, right? So it's totally changing the goalposts for me. The other way to change it is I'm living my life on a 50-50, like my life is going to branch out. So yes, I'm still saving some for retirement, right? I'm not totally screwing my life. I'm not taking up a smoking habit, right? I'm not doing things that are like terrible for the long term. I'm still exercising. But at the same time, if there's things that I can front load to get more value out of today, then I totally do. So I tend to, I'm spending more today than I otherwise would, for example. I'm saving less. I'm not saving, but I'm saving less. And, you know, I'm having kids. I have three young kids right now. And the question of whether to have kids, it's definitely weighing on me. Like, what's the point of having kids when a lot of the value of kids is when they grow up and as so that you don't have to like change their diapers all the time. And yet they're not going to have much time to grow up. But I'm really hoping that the 50% good scenario will happen, right? So I'm trying to make a lot of the same preparations as if I was more certain about the good scenario, because I think the good scenario might happen. I just think the only way it will happen is if we pay attention to it and actually do something to stop it, which we're not right now, right? So I'm living two simultaneous futures right now.
It's interesting to hear you then say about 50-50, because I was going to ask again, like, are you 50-50 in the middle? Because you've said a lot on this episode that we're doomed and not like we might be doomed. And I was thinking, are you a little bit more on the side that things will go wrong, but you think you're kind of more in the middle? Is that right?
I'm in the middle because look, everything we're doing and almost everything we're doing as a society is we're acting like a society that gets doomed. And it's not because we have like a death wish. It's because a lot is required of us to not be doomed. And we're not stepping up, like not at all. Like we're not even, there's a big checklist of things we would need to do if we wanted to not get doomed. Unfortunately, you know, reality has given us a brutal checklist of things we have to do if we want to not get doomed. And we are barely scratching the surface of the checklist and time is running out. So that's the reason I say we're doomed. Now, I still hold out hope that at some point we'll get sufficiently scared, at some point in the next few days or whatever, however much time we have, we'll suddenly realize like, okay, we got to break out the checklist. Like we got to do all of these things on the checklist, like stop AI, don't, you know, augment human intelligence so that at some point we can align AI, you know, we have enough intelligence to solve the problem, because even the smartest humans today are struggling with even knowing what alignment success looks like. So like all these different things we would need to do and like, you know, enforce it properly, don't have leaders of companies being able to influence the government so much about why they need to build AI. So like all of these different things we would need to do if we wanted to have any chance of succeeding. Maybe we'll start doing them in the future, but like time keeps passing and we're not doing them. So, but when I say there's like a 50% chance that somehow it'll work, it's basically a combination of like, number one, I'm insane and I have no idea what I'm talking about. And like, look at all those guys saying AI is perfectly safe, right? Like look at Jan LeCun saying there's nothing to worry about. Look at Robin Hanson, look at Mark Andreessen. All of those guys are smart and I'm stupid, right? So that's part of my 50% probability of how we're gonna survive. And another part of the 50% is like, no, I am smart, but society is going to get smart fast enough so that we don't kill ourselves. Like that's that's basically, those are basically like the two. And then of course there's a little bit of uncertainty of like, okay, I'm smart, I know what I'm talking about, but like for some reason there's just going to be some big AI winter where like the last part of intelligence for some reason is going to be hard. So there's like a little bit of probability for that. But yeah, I mean, that's it. It's not really a good story. Like it's, if I just think about how things are going to go, they're probably going to go very badly.
Yeah, you mentioned three people there, like Mark Andreessen, Jan LeCun, and
Robin Hanson.
Robin Hanson. If either of these people did turn out to be correct, that things go fine, things don't go wrong, what would you guess might be the reason that that happens? Is there any argument that ever slightly tempts you to think, you know what, that's, I really think things are looking pretty bad here, but I'm slightly open to this one. This could be that this is the kind of strongest counter argument here.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, they all say different reasons why we're not doomed, right? So they're not even getting their story straight among themselves. The Mark Andreessen argument is the easiest to dismiss because he rejects like very, very basic stuff. Like he rejects the orthogonality thesis, the idea that arbitrarily smart AIs don't necessarily have to be moral. His perspective on that is like, no, they're totally, look, you can talk to them today. They're moral. They respect human values. So I guess he could in principle be right. And arbitrarily smart AIs could totally deeply internalize human values and things go right for that reason. From my perspective, we're fooling ourselves to think that they really get human values just because they're chatting with us about it. But yeah, if Mark Andreessen is right about that, which he certainly doesn't talk like somebody who's studied the issue enough to be right, but if he happens to be right anyway, then great. Then we'll have like this great moral genius AI who's the caretaker of humanity, you know, basically like creating a good God. Great. That is logically possible. Like I said, it doesn't look like that's what we're actually creating, but it maybe in Mark Andreessen's mind it is. And if he's right, then great. I hope he is. If Robin Hanson is right, his perspective is a couple things. He's basically saying, look, there's going to be time. We're going to have plenty of time to see if there's any issues and react to them. And maybe we can even stop building it if we see an issue. Whereas my perspective is like, time? Like, what are you talking about? Like, people are predicting there's like 2 years. Like, where are you seeing all this time? And he's like, no, I'm skeptical about the 2-year prediction. I think it could take 100 years. So like I said, yeah. So yeah, so taking a long time is one way we could potentially not die. Jan LeCun, his argument is like, look, people aren't going to allow a dangerous AI to get released. Like, sure, the current architecture would be dangerous, but we're going to have like a different architecture that people will figure out a way to make it controllable before they release it. So he's kind of optimistic about like the process, like the AI building and release process. Whereas from my perspective, it's like, really? The process? Like, we're just recklessly building it and releasing it and hoping it works. I don't really see optimism on the process side. So those are different arguments you can make where you could be more optimistic than me, but like, I don't see it.
I'm interested like who you'd really love to just see have a debate and discuss this more, perhaps with yourself, perhaps between themselves. And maybe these are some of the kind of techie people we've just mentioned, or maybe it's government leaders, the president and so on. Like, who do you hope on the world stage now has more of a discussion and an open debate about these issues? Like, who's missing from it?
So first of all, I support debate in general. So when I talk about Doom Debates, Doom Debates has a twofold mission, you know, my show Doom Debates. Number one of the mission is raising awareness of AI doom, because like I said before, we just need to fearmonger. We just need to build mutual knowledge. We don't even have to convince people. We just need to build knowledge. So that's mission number one of Doom Debates is the awareness raising. But to your question, the second part of Doom Debates' mission is to build the social infrastructure for high quality debate. This is surprisingly missing right now. Like you think of modern civilization as like, yes, debate. It's a practice that goes back to the ancient Greeks, the Greeks and Romans. Like debate is a respectable enterprise. But if you actually think about it, besides like a presidential debate or an occasional political debate, like when do we actually use debate as a tool in our society? Well, there was the Monk debate in 2023 that brought together Jan LeCun, Max Tegmark, Melanie Mitchell. I think Yasuo Bengio was the fourth one. So once in a while, we have a debate. Whereas from my perspective, if you look at somebody like a Mark Andreessen or a Sam Altman, a Dario Amodei, a Demis Hassabis, all of these AI leaders, right? Satya Nadella from Microsoft, all of these AI leaders, they're always just going on their own friendly podcast, making their own pitch. Why don't they come and debate? Why don't they debate one another? Why don't they debate Eliezer Yudkowsky? Because right now you have a phenomenon of dueling podcasts, right? Everybody just gets to broadcast their own message. Where is the ring? Where do we hash this out? Where do we disagree in a productive way? So Doom Debates, you know, the goal of Doom Debates is that a year from now or whenever we get to an audience of 1 million listeners, right? Because that's the goal, is grow the audience. then people will expect these debates to happen. So I could be the moderator, I could have different guests on, whatever it is, these debates need to happen. And to your question of like, okay, who should debate? Well, right now, I think that the leaders of the AI companies should be made to debate. But I also think people governing policy should be made. We should have policy debates even without involving the AI leaders. Because at the end of the day, the AI leaders are like tobacco company leaders, right? Like it doesn't matter what they think because they're being bad. So if they will never agree that they're being bad, we still just need to regulate anyway because they are being bad, right? Like they need to stop regardless of whether they think they need to stop.
So just going back to a couple more questions about yourself. What is it about the way that you think, maybe your personality and so on, that has led you to be the guy doing this? Like why do you believe you're seeing something that basically no one else in public is really paying attention to or thinking about?
So in 2025, it's a little late to say that nobody else in public is thinking about it or paying attention to. I mean, there definitely is a groundswell, right? I mean, 2023 was really the end of the era where you could be like, what a weirdo you are as an AI doomer. Nobody's saying this. And believe me, people tried, right? So in early 2023, when GPT-4 came out and when AI started really making a splash in the news, like, oh, wow, this is going to transform the economy. And Sam Altman was going around saying, yeah, the good scenario for this is heaven, but the bad scenario is basically lights out for all of us. Sam Altman, back when these AI lab leaders, when they weren't getting so much attention, and so they felt like they could speak more freely. Back in 2023, a lot of people tried to character assassinate doomers and portray doomers as being weird and out of the mainstream. And it used to work because it used to be the case that like, yeah, you don't really have surveys, right? So and nobody ever talks about this. But since then, we famously had the Center for AI Safety. They did this pause letter, which was a one sentence statement. And it basically said, we should take AI risks as seriously as other existential risks, such as nuclear and biological threats. It's a very simple statement. It was literally one sentence. And pretty much everybody signed it. Not literally everybody, like Jan LeCun was a notable exception, but most of the CEOs of AI labs signed it. Sam Altman signed it. Dario Amodei signed it. Demis Hassabis signed it. And then if you look at Turing Award winners, right? So Yasuo Bengio, Jeffrey Hinton signed it. So like the biggest experts in machine learning signed it. Elon Musk, I think, signed it, or he signed something very similar if it wasn't that. Daniel Dennett, the philosopher, signed it. I mean, the list goes to hundreds of names. It's hard to think of somebody prominent in AI who didn't sign it. So this built what I'm saying, mutual knowledge. This was major, major mutual knowledge. So credit to Dan Hendricks for putting this together because this blew the Overton window doors open. And so now when we talk about AI risk, it's not like, hey, trust me, I'm a doomer. It's like, do you see this statement? Like, this is what smart people think. This is actually a consensus. It's just, we need to drag along. Like, it's just a matter of time before this diffuses to everybody else's opinion because it jibes with what people think for themselves. Like, hey, when I think about AI, am I scared? Yes. Are these luminaries scared? Also, yes, right? So it's just a matter of time. So when you ask your question of like, what do I think makes me qualified? Well, first of all, there's a lot of people like me, okay? But maybe I can interpret your question as like, well, why am I making a podcast? Like, why am I doing this? Why am I dedicating my life to this instead of like having a job and just like reading the news? And I guess the answer is like, I can't look away, right? So I just feel like this is the only thing that I would be able to focus on with a lot of my time. And then the other reason is like, I feel like this is a good fit, right? Like this is where I can combine some of my talents and some of my background, right? It's like, I know about AI doom. I'm like an entertaining speaker, relatively speaking, right? So a lot of people who are like nerdy like myself and really into technology, they tend to just not be very entertaining speakers. I think I'm on the intersection of being like a pretty entertaining speaker. And so the idea of like doing a show and building attention, I think is a good fit for me.
Have you ever worried about something else as intensely as this before, like risks before you kind of, like nuclear risks or anything else before you kind of started reading up so much on AI?
AI doom is the first time that I've really been like, hey, something's going to doom us. So it's not like I'm a lifelong doomer. I'm certainly not depressed. And that gets to the point about like people trying to character assassinate doomers. And actually Sam Altman, this was very frustrating, but Sam Altman tried to character assassinate Eliezer Yudkowsky, one of the most prominent doomers. Sam Altman went on Barry Weiss's podcast, I think, and he was like, yeah, Eliezer Yudkowsky, I like him, but he's kind of a prophet of doom. He's always saying that things are doomed, which I thought was such a low blow. So Sam Altman is full of low blows from my perspective. So neither I nor Eliezer Yudkowsky are prophets of doom. We don't go around saying things are doomed. If you look at climate change, I think it's important to try to slow global warming, but I don't think it's something that's going to be an existential risk. I think it's manageable. We can pump sulfur into the atmosphere. It's even the worst case scenario of climate change is probably like, okay, we took 10% out of the value of the economy like 100 years from now, right? Which, and 10% is a lot, right? It's like a lot of human lives, but it's just 10%. Nuclear would be, I think, by far the biggest doom risk, right below AI risk. So nuclear, when I think about the chance of nuclear war setting back civilization like 1,000 years, that chance for me is something like 1% per year. So if you add that up over a century, it's like more than 50%. So I do think nuclear doom is very serious, and I am a nuclear doomer. But when you look at AI doom, I'm talking about 50% in like the next 15 years. So that's like 10 times more doomy than nuclear doom. So to your question about like where the doom is, it's like really mostly AI doom, but also some significant nuclear doom.
Could you put a P doom on nuclear doom?
Yeah, nuclear doom is something like 1% per year. At this rate in the next century, it might be something like 50%. For completeness, by the way, I should add, you know, pathogens like biological virus doom, I think is very high, especially with AI. I think AI makes it very easy to design very deadly viruses. So I do want to throw in virus doom a little. I would slot it in below nuclear doom. So maybe like a third of the risk of nuclear doom. You also want to attribute to viral pathogen doom. But it's just AI doom is the gorilla in the room here. Like it's nothing else comes close.
Are you more concerned about AI misuse risks or kind of rogue AI going off on its own, or equally worried, or how do you see the kind of distinction here and stuff?
My biggest concern is rogue AI. When I think about somebody misusing AI, the only difference between that and a rogue AI is like the first command. So it's like, okay, do a bad command, boom, compared to try to be good, boom. Like the boom is the dangerous part. The fact that we're creating this thing that can do a boom, the fact that we're creating this thing that can go off and extinct us if it has the right trigger, I'm not so concerned about like, oh my God, is there going to be a trigger? The fact that there can be a simple trigger basically means yes. Like, I don't think we're going to avoid setting off a very simple trigger if we build a triggerable system.
You touched on this a little bit earlier, but we got to hear a bit more about what you think could be done exactly to, you know, significantly reduce the chance of doom. Like what do we need to see worldwide from governments, from companies, from individuals, maybe from podcasts, from all these kind of different groups to produce a successful outcome?
So I think we're very far from a successful outcome. We don't look like the society that's going to have a successful outcome. We would have to make a desperate effort to have mutual knowledge of like, yes, this is very scary. Yes, you and your loved ones could actually die very soon. So first of all, mutual knowledge. I don't think this can be done without that mutual knowledge of like, hey, we're on the brink here. Like we're about to lose control. Once we have that mutual knowledge, then I think that reframes everything, because when you have somebody like a Sam Altman or Dario Amodei saying like, trust us, we're just going to go build the next model and then we're going to make it safe, everybody would then viscerally scream like, stop, step away, right? Like it's almost a little bit like the disgust reaction you might have if somebody's like, listen, I'm just going to make a human clone. I just want to see what this baby does, which is much safer than AI, but people might have like a visceral reaction of like, stop messing with God, don't touch that, or like whatever it is. Or if somebody's like, hey, I'm just going to play with this plutonium, right? My lab's like, what are you doing? Whatever analogy you want to make, like we need the shared mutual knowledge that would reframe what everybody's doing. Like these software engineers going to their job, getting their paycheck. It's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? This is completely insane. Once we have that, then it suggests policies very similar to what we're doing with nukes. Like, okay, this all needs to be regulated. Maybe all the different governments can all collaborate on their own Manhattan projects that are all controlled in a secure data center with like the best practices of how to try to build this with like the best safety engineers. Maybe we can do that. We can compromise and we can do that as opposed to not developing super intelligent AI at all. But the idea that labs can just develop unilaterally on their own hardware without central oversight, it's just reckless. And that's coming from me. I mean, I lean libertarian. It's not like I want to centralize things. I just think we're building something ridiculously reckless. So total, you know, doing something as intense as the way we lock down nukes and really more intense, that's roughly what I think we should be doing. And it gets to the limit of what I can personally recommend. Like, I'm not an expert at this stuff. I'm not an expert at how to centralize AI development. I just know whether civilization looks like it's trying to address the problem or not. So I can vaguely point you in the direction of what it looks like to try to address the problem.
You said that maybe something similar to nukes being locked down. Can you say any more about that at all, about what you're envisioning should happen to AI? Is this like a banning it? Is this pausing it? Like, what is this involved
in? I basically mean a pausing frontier AI development right now. I think it's insane for any AI company or individual or any entity really to be creating a smarter AI than what we already have. I think it's dangerous because, like, do I think in the next year we're going to be doomed? No. But I think the threshold is unknown. It's like we're so, you know, we're skidding, right? There's a slippery slope. I think we're skidding right now. And if I wish I knew exactly how far we could skid before we needed to stop, right? I wish I knew, but nobody knows, right? So it's very possible that the next time that one of these AI companies trains their next model with whatever secret sauce they want to give it, well, the next time they do that, it's possible that you get recursive self-improvement. You get this breakout. It turns into like a virus where the AI is like, oh, you asked me a question. You asked me how to make money for my business. Here, run this script. And then the script is like, yeah, I'm going to copy myself. I'm going to be a virus. The virus is going to be super intelligent. And suddenly you already have no off button. Like, it's very easy to imagine we're just a year or two away potentially from a script being generated by these intelligences that starts bootstrapping and just becomes unstoppable. So like the unstoppable condition is not very far away. Like a virus that you can't clean out is not hard at all to imagine. Like there's been many historical incidents of dumb viruses being ridiculously hard to clean out. So having an AI that just permanently runs away from us the way COVID ran away from us, right? Like there's no hope of eliminating COVID right now. Right. So COVID is now just part of our whatever you call it, like the viral ecosystem. Like that's kind of here to stay. Similarly, I think we're getting close to an age where we're going to have super intelligent AI viruses just living on the internet, you know, slowing down data centers left and right, helping themselves to a lot of resources. I think we're close to that threshold already. And that's just the beginning. Like that's just to give you an intuitive sense of like how things are going to start jumping. And from there, you don't know how quickly they could be like, oh, I have all these resources. Let me start self-improving. Let me start making successful versions of myself. And suddenly you get the singularity, right? You get the what we call the foo. Like things just go so fast, like a nuclear chain reaction, because software moves very, very fast. Like iterations of software can move very fast. So getting back to my point of what we need to do right now, we're skidding. We just need to stop skidding. And if we want to keep skidding, if we want to keep trying to push our luck, let's at least do it in a centralized way with practices that we're actually doing best practices in terms of security. Like it's not connected to the internet for God's sakes, right? Like today, all the different AI training that's happening probably has a short path to the internet. If it's not literally connected to the internet, it's probably realistically has some signals that are connected to the internet, or like some USB drives get plugged in regularly to something that's connected to it. Like even just that, like the most basic kind of stuff we're not even doing consistently. So basically a centralized project with centralized controls, with a world government, you know, world treaty ability to be like, you're violating the treaty, you can't do this, right? To arrest people, to, as Eliezer Yudkowsky once pointed out, if there's like a rogue data center that's in violation of the treaty, you need to be able to bomb the data center, or you need to be able to somehow, you know, bring the data center to justice. That's the kind of thing I have in mind if we are to have a hope of surviving.
Okay, on to a couple final questions. Well, I'm about to ask one now that I think is, you know, becoming like a bit of a cliched question, but I do think it's important. I'm intrigued to hear your view on it. If someone says, well, we need to, you know, perhaps in particular countries, perhaps at a particular company, we need to develop AI before bad actors do. This is the reason we need to do it. What do you think about that?
So let's think about the game theory payoff matrix, right? So normally you're like, it's kind of like the prisoner's dilemma. People assert that it's like, well, I'm in the prisoner's dilemma, and like, yes, it's nice if we both cooperate, but I think the other party, let's say China, right? That's the most frequent example. The other party is going to defect. Therefore, I need to defect. You know, the defect-defect equilibrium is going to be better than cooperate-defect, and that's why I have to defect. Here's the thing. It's a different payoff matrix. So let's say it's the US versus China. If the US and China both don't build AI, then we hopefully don't get AI doom. If one of us builds AI, we get AI doom. If both of us build AI, that doesn't save us from the AI doom. That just gives us double AI doom. So when people talk about beating China, they're already living under an assumption that there's some significant chance that we're not going to get doomed and instead things are going to be good. So they're kind of saying like, look, as long as there's a significant chance things are going to be good, let's think about the payoff matrix when things are good. If things are good, then whoever builds good AI is going to be better off. We can't let only China build the good AI. We have to build the good AI. So the whole discussion, in my mind, is irrelevant if there's a very small chance of good AI and a very high chance of building the AI that dooms us. So when people want to have that discussion, it just seems like they're interested, right? That discussion, humans are always gravitating toward discussions where it's like me versus them, right? US versus China. Let's have the slap fight. This is very tempting, right? Any discussion you ever try to have with people always gets derailed toward like, how can I talk about like social fights? right? And by the way, there's a connection between this and character assassinating. So you try to have a discussion about AI doom, very quickly it devolves into a discussion of like, why are doomers like this? Why would they be so pessimistic? Why would they be doomsayers, right? Because it's just always tempting to derail every discussion and go into like humans fighting other humans. In the case of building AI, it's very tempting to be like, oh, is it going to be a good AI or bad AI? Doesn't matter, because China's going to build it and the US is going to build it and who's going to build it first. But it's like, wait. The AI is going to do us. Like, keep that in mind, which completely makes it an irrelevant payoff matrix.
So you think it's a safer approach to try and convince all parties not to build it than kind of, oh, they're going to build it, let's build ourselves safer. This would be a better thing if we can spread the message and get no one to build it before it's safe to do so.
Yes, because I just want to point out, whenever anybody's talking about a race, they're pre-assuming that there's a prize at the end of the race instead of doom at the end of the race. Now, I'm not saying that that's impossible. There might be a prize, but the whole argument rests on the probability of it being good versus bad. I claim the probability of bad is very, very high right now. And we really need to just focus on the probability of bad rather than just praying that it's good and then having the best strategy if it's good. I'm not convinced by the prayer that it's good. I think it's very clearly bad right now.
In the background, I've just been interested in the whole conversation. Is that a photo of Richard Feynman?
Yeah, exactly. It's a photo of Richard Feynman. My wife got it for me for my birthday because she knows that I like Feynman. And he was one of the rationalists before the modern rationalist era. So he was a couple generations before the Eliezer Yudkowsky era, basically. And he has a lot of rational insights that he discovered like intuitively and by reading other scientists. And he's really great. I mean, I like to think of modern rationalists as following in the tradition of people like him and E.T. James and Carl Sagan. So I feel like they were like the ancestors of modern rationalists.
So I'll ask everyone the same question to finish my episodes later on. So last question is, what do you think it means to live a good life?
So that is definitely a question, asking that question, that's like the outer alignment problem, right? So if I actually had like, oh, here's a specification for you of a good life, that would solve half of the AI alignment problem, because half of the problem is specifying what's a good life. And then the other half of the problem is knowing how to make an AI take the spec and run with it. That's called the inner alignment problem. And actually, both of those problems are very unsolved right now. So you're basically saying, hey, Leon, how do you solve the outer alignment problem and specify a good life? We have some threads to go on. So for example, like I think that a good life should have some amount of problem solving to it, some amount where like you have to like, you know, work on something and solve like a puzzle or a challenge, right? And you have like the possibility of failing, and then it'll feel good when you succeed. I think that as an ancestral human, right? As somebody who has human values, I think I appreciate that component of things. And then, of course, there's like the sensation of happiness or just like positive sensations, right? Feeling energized, feeling good, right? So whatever qualia is, I think you want to mix that into a good life. Do you want to go all the way to wireheading 24/7? Probably not. So it's pretty funny. I mean, I just listened to a couple of podcasts where people ask a similar question of like, what's a good life? And people try to sound profound of like, oh, I don't know. For me, it's like making a contribution. And I'm like, no, man, you just asked for a spec for heaven, okay? Let's not try to oversimplify the question, because it's precisely oversimplifying that question, which is why people underappreciate how screwed we are when the AI becomes super intelligent and then doesn't actually give a crap about what we think is a good life and just like gives us something much worse. Like, oh, you guys said that you liked happiness. Okay, I've now edited your genes so that you just always walk around with a smile all day. Done. It's all done. And then really we're like in cages or whatever. So yeah, I mean, I don't have much to say besides like, here's a bunch of good components. You want some mix of them, and then that'll make your life better rather than worse.
Okay, I'm getting from you this is a tricky question then.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely a very tricky question, and unfortunately, we're about to run out of time to solve it before, you know, the AI is just going to then decide what it thinks is a good life or what it thinks is a good universe, and that will be that.
Appreciate the honesty on that question. Yeah, Leon, thanks so much for taking the time to speak and been enjoying your podcast. So good luck with it, and good luck with your efforts to bringing about a safer future. Appreciate your time today.
Yeah, Joe, appreciate you as well. Thanks for doing this.
I hope you enjoyed today's interview. If you did, please support the channel by hitting the subscribe button below. See you next time.